Good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
We're very glad that you're here this morning. We're always thankful for the opportunities which we have. You know, you have weeks sometimes that you struggle with your lesson, and this week was actually a week where I struggled with my lesson. I changed it 3 times. This is the one that I ended up settling on, and this is the one that we're going with. But you might hear the other ones in the coming weeks. Who knows? A lot of work was done this week, and this is where we came out. I ran across an article talking about harvest, and particularly, how harvest is maybe a little bit different this year because of COVID. And it had in this article pictures of how they had people walking in the fields, and they had a machine that was carrying some, plastic shields in between the people that were doing the harvesting. And all of the harvesters had masks on and all of these things. And, my observation after I read a few of these articles is harvest still happens. You know, there's certain things that the virus didn't shut down. I mean, there's certain things that have to happen even if, certain really bad things are happening, right? Well, we didn't shut down the hospitals because COVID was happening. I mean, we took precautions and we did what we could, but the hospitals can't shut down. I mean, that's your chance of life. And when it comes to harvest as well, you think about harvest. I mean, harvest had to happen. I mean, without food, without the production of food, I mean, we're in a dangerous spot as well. There's certain things that we're not shut down. So what I want to think about is, has the spiritual harvest been shut down? You know, you think about that, God uses planting and those type of things a lot of times as trying to use those to give us a message. And in Matthew chapter 9, Jesus talks about the harvest. And we want to look at this passage in Matthew chapter 9, and we really want to think about the spiritual harvest. The spiritual harvest that is at hand, the spiritual harvest that's going on, because the interesting thing about the spiritual harvest, it is year-round. This is a harvest that is constantly going. This is not seasonal. There is always souls that we need to be conscious of and thinking about. But Matthew chapter 9, I'll start in verse 35 and read, says, "And Jesus went about all the cities and villages, teaching in their synagogues, preaching the gospel of the kingdom, and healing every sickness and every disease among the people. But when he saw the multitudes, he was moved with compassion for them, because they were weary and scattered like sheep having no shepherd. Then he said to his disciples, 'The harvest truly is plentiful, but the laborers are few. Therefore pray the Lord of the harvest to send out laborers into his harvest.'" This is what we're going to talk about this morning, is the spiritual harvest and our obligations to that harvest as Christians. You know, you think about Jesus' last words in Matthew chapter 28, before he ascended to heaven, he has the Great Commission. And he's there with the disciples, and verse 18 in chapter 28 of Matthew says, "Jesus came and spoke to them and saying, 'All authority is given to me in heaven and on earth. Go therefore and make disciples of all nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father and of the Son and of the Holy Spirit, teaching them to observe all things that I have commanded you. And lo, I'm with you always, even to the end of the age.'" You know, last words are important. And the last words of Jesus before he ascends to heaven, he says, "Hey, you're going to go. All authority has been given to me." You think about that idea. If Jesus is speaking through authority, he is telling these individuals what they're going to be doing. Go make disciples. We'll make disciples how? Well, baptism. It's right there in the passage. Make disciples, baptism, and it doesn't end after baptism. Teaching them to observe all things. We're talking about evangelism. And talking about evangelism in respect to the harvest. I really think that's what he's getting at in Matthew chapter 9. He's getting at the idea of the harvest. He's getting at the idea of evangelism, the idea that we need to be out and about, that there is work to be done. But some observations from Matthew chapter 9. The first observation that I come across is that the harvest is plentiful. The harvest is plentiful. You know, you think about that, you think about the scene where Jesus is at, it describes the scene. He's looking out on this multitude. He's looking out at the multitude, and as he starts to contemplate some things, it says that he has compassion on these individuals. And I think he's thinking about these people. And I want to see the same thing that Jesus was seeing in the situation. What was Jesus seeing when he was looking out at this multitude? Because I certainly don't want to be blind to the things that Jesus was observing. When Jesus looked out at this group of people, what did he see? I think he saw some people that needed help. I mean, clearly we can see that through the physical healing that's going on, but we know that Jesus did those physical healings for a reason, to show that he was the Messiah, that he was going to be able to help people in a spiritual way. In a spiritual way. Are we blind to what Jesus saw on that day? What did Jesus see when he looked out at the multitude? I think he saw people that needed help. I think he saw the lost. Is that not what Jesus saw on that day? When he looked out, and he's about to say these words about a harvest. He's looking out at this group of people. He's thinking about this group of people, this mass of people, and he thinks to himself, these people need help. He has compassion on them. He thinks about these individuals. He thinks about their state. He has pity. He has compassion. He's considering the state that they're in. Isn't Jesus, when he looks out at the crowd, he sees the lost? Do we see the lost? Certainly that was Jesus' mission. Luke chapter 19, verse 10, for the Son of Man has come to seek and to save that which is lost. That was one of Jesus' primary missions. He looked out at these individuals. He understands they need help. He understands that they're lost. And that, within him, it says he's moved with compassion. Do we see the lost? Or are we but blinders on? We don't see the lost anymore. We walk through our life, we walk through the fields of life, and we don't see the lost. It's almost like we try to erase it, like put it over here in the side of our minds. It's like we look up to the sky, we look all around, but we won't look at the harvest that's before us. We won't look at the multitudes of individuals that need help, that need assistance. Are we blinded to the lost? Do we see what Jesus sees? You think of Luke chapter 15. It's all about the lost. The lost sheep, the lost coin, the lost son. There's a lot of loss going on. And I think that's what Jesus sees when he looks out at this multitude. He sees people that need help. He sees individuals that are lost. And he understands their condition. In 2 Corinthians chapter 5, verses 9 to 11, I think when you contemplate the multitude, and you contemplate sin, and you contemplate these individuals that need help, I think it doesn't take you too long till you realize the destination of these individuals. In 2 Corinthians chapter 5, verses 9 through 11, it says, therefore, we make it our aim, whether present or absent, to be well-pleasing to him. For we must all appear before the judgment seat of Christ, that each one, receiving the things done in his body, according to what he has done, whether good or bad. Knowing, therefore, the terror of the Lord, we persuade men. You think about that. We understand that as Christians. We understand that we will stand before the judgment seat of Christ. And one of our motivations to go out into the field and to engage with the lost, to engage with those that need help, is we understand on judgment day the things that will happen. It's interesting, 2 Corinthians chapter 5. In verse 11 it says, knowing therefore the terror of the Lord, we persuade men. Because we know what's going to happen. We know what God has to say. We know about judgment. We know about heaven and hell. Because, perhaps we could say, moved with compassion, we will act. We will try to do what we can to work in the field of our Lord. When we see those that need help, when we see those that are lost, what do you feel? Do you feel compassion? That's what the Lord felt. He looks out at these individuals, and certainly they have physical ailments, but certainly Jesus also knows their spiritual ailments, and he looks out, he sees the multitude, he starts to think about these things surely, and it says that he was moved with compassion. When you look at the lost, when you consider the lost, do you feel compassion? Do we have a lack of compassion for the lost? Do we have a tendency to perhaps stay in our homes and not go out into the field? And I understand that we're in this interesting situation right now with COVID, but we're talking about fit. But when we go throughout our lives, are we taking Christ with us? I mean, really, that is our field. When you go to the workplace, a lot of people are going to the workplace with their masks. That is your field. That is where you can do some work for the Lord, where you can show compassion for the lost and those that need help. You know, you think of Jesus. He's in this situation. He's considering the multitude. We see that he's moved with compassion. And I suggest to you, when you are moved with compassion, you will act. And certainly Jesus did act. You think about what he's going to do after Matthew 9, all the things he's going to do throughout his life as he's considering the multitude, as he's considering the world, is he is going to get to this point where he says, I will die for them. He's moved with compassion, but he's moved with the compassion to the point that he acts. And we have to be moved with that same compassion when we look at the lost. When we look at the multitude, we should be moved with compassion. A multitude that needs help, a multitude that is lost in sin, we should be moved with compassion. We should see the helpless sheep without a shepherd, and we understand that we can point them to Jesus. The church is not just about Christians. It's about those that are not here today. And it's easy to get stuck in the pattern of, I'm going to show up Sunday, I'm going to worship God, I'm going to show up Sunday, I'm going to worship God, and you forget, it's not just about the church, it's not just about Christians, it's not just about our worship, it's about the others as well. It's about the multitude, it's about the sinners, it's about the lost of the world as well. We cannot forget about the work that has to be done in the field. You think about Jesus, certainly he showed compassion throughout his life, and we see that in many of his occurrences as he's working with individuals. In Matthew chapter 14, verse 14, it says, and when Jesus went out, he saw a great multitude, and he was moved with compassion for them and healed their sick. We see this constantly with Jesus. We see that when he observes a multitude, when he observes the lost, when he observes those that need help, he is moved with compassion. Really a trait of the Messiah. Do we have compassion for the lost? Has our compassion been diluted? Has our compassion been lost for those that are in a situation? You know, perhaps there's a danger of forgetting about the lost. We get ourselves in a condition where we feel like we're safe, where we're in a good relationship with God, and then we forget what God has asked us to do. Like we forget about the Great Commission in Matthew chapter 28. We forget about why Jesus came to seek and save those that are lost. I think certainly our culture is pushing us away from that idea. I mean, the devil has done a number on religious discussion. If you bring up religion in any fashion, it's like, oh, no, you can't do that. Well, that's a big part of Christianity. A big part of Christianity is going out and trying to influence other individuals, to try to share Jesus, to try to share the gospel, to try to share those things. But Jesus has said there is a plentiful harvest. But I think sometimes we don't even look in the field. Look in the field. The Lord said there's a plentiful harvest. Is he lying to us? Is there not anything there? I mean, he's saying the harvest is plentiful. That is what he said. Is he lying to us? And is he saying, nope, there's no chance in the world. There's no hope at all. That's not what he's saying. The harvest is plentiful. There is an opportunity for all. But we won't even look at the field anymore. We won't even look out in the field. And there's something else I think we have to think about. Is that certainly Jesus saw the lost. He certainly saw these individuals that needed help. But something else in this text is that I see that the Lord saw potential. Didn't he see potential? He said the harvest is plentiful. Some of us might not necessarily say that when we look at the lost and dying world, but Jesus is saying, hey, the harvest is plentiful. God can see potential in the lost world. You know, I'm so thankful of that fact when I think of myself. I'm so thankful that God saw potential in the lost world. And perhaps that changes our perspective when we go out into the world, we go out into the field, and we're looking for that harvest. Is that every person we come into contact with is a potential saint, is a potential Christian. Do you think of people like that when you go out? When you're going through the drive-thru, do you think of that person as a potential saint, a potential Christian? When you go out and work in the workplace, when you go out anywhere, living your life, do you see those individuals as a potential saint, a potential Christian? Because that's exactly how God sees them. The harvest is plentiful. He desires all to be saved and come to a knowledge of the truth. Have we given up on the field? Have we given up on the harvest that God said is there? The harvest is plentiful. Jesus sees the people of the world. He sees and he has compassion. He's moved with compassion. And he sees potential for the harvest. And you know what? That's a different perspective than I think sometimes Christians look at the world. Sometimes Christians look at the world as, oh, dark, 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 dark. Jesus almost looking at it from a positive light. Look out here. Look at all the potential. Look at all the potential of the world. Every sinner has the potential of coming to the Lord, being changed, dying to their old self, and being raised in newness of life. God sees potential. And I'm thankful that he does. You know, I think of the Sauls and Pauls of the world. You're talking about a rat sheet. Look at that. Look at Saul. He's got a rat sheet. He's hunting down people that are Christians. I mean, he's got a rat sheet. He's got all kinds of things on his record. Did God give up on Paul? Saul? He didn't give up on him. He saw potential. And we see the dramatic change that Paul goes through from non-Christian to Christian. We see what he does in his Christian life as he is transformed by the teachings of Christ. In Mark chapter 16, verse 15, it says, and he said to them, go into all the world and preach the gospel to every creature. And we know what the next verse is. He who believes and baptized shall be saved. But when Jesus looks out at the crowd, I think that's significant. Because I think a lot of people, when we think about our evangelism, when we think of our work in the harvest, when we think of our work in the Lord's field, is we try to limit it to just people that we have close relationships with. You know, each and every day, it's almost like you're going to a new field. You know, sometimes I'll travel. I remember one time, which I'm going to tell the story later on in the lesson, but I traveled to the center of the state because I was a first-year teacher, and they had training there, and I went to the center of the state. Did I leave my Christianity behind? No, I did not. That was my new field that day. That was my field. When I went into that training, I was a Christian. And when I went into that training, that was my field. That was my workplace. When I was at college, when I walk in, that's my workplace. That's my field. When I go to a family function, that's my workplace. That's my field. When Jesus looks out, he at the multitude, he looks at all of them, and whenever he comes in contact with them, that is his workplace. That is his field. I think many times we cut down our field to just those that we know by name. Which that's a good place to work, but sometimes we cut our field down where it's like, I can only talk to two people about becoming a Christian. What? You've got a big field. You've got a lot of people that you're going to come in contact throughout your life, and you are going to be able to influence and impact those individuals. Do you see the potential harvest? I mean, we're really bad about walking out in the field and we don't even ask questions. We just walk out in the field and say, oh, look at this person. They have their life together financially. They've got some good jobs. They've got kids. There's no alcohol, no drugs. They're good. They don't need Jesus. And then we go over here and we're walking in the field of our life and we see this other person over here and they have tattoos and they're having some other problems with drug addiction and things like that. And we go, oh, they won't even listen. Aren't we cutting down our field so quickly? We'll walk down through the field and say, these people are too good for Jesus, and these people won't listen to Jesus. You have cut down your field. What's going on? We've got work to do in our lives. As we walk through our lives, we have the field which we find ourselves, and certainly we can teach, certainly we can defend, and certainly we can try to influence through our example. But can you see the potential harvest? Because the devil is good at convincing us that there's no harvest out there. The devil's good at convincing Christians that we look out of this building and we just see a wasteland. There's nothing to be harvested. There's nothing there. There's nothing at all. There's no potential harvest. The harvest is plentiful. Now, I'm not saying there's a lot of bad stuff that doesn't happen in the world. I'm not saying that the seed doesn't get taken away. I'm not saying that America is the best soil, but I'm saying I think we stay at home sometimes and we don't even go out in the field to investigate. Are there people out there that are asking Bible questions right now? Yes, there are. Are there people out there that would perhaps want a Bible study right now? Yes, there are. Are there people that have questions about the Lord's church? Yes, there are. There are people out there just waiting for us to come in contact with them. But we said, no, we're not even going out to the field. It's a desolate wasteland. That's what the devil wants you to believe. The harvest is plentiful. The invitation is for all. It's for the rich, it's for the poor, it's for all groups. And yet we've cut down the field and said there's nothing there. So glad that Jesus sees the potential in the lost and dying world, because that just happens to be me. This happens to be everybody. He sees the potential. He sees the lost. He sees the individuals that need help. And he says, you know what? They have a shot. And you know what? They're worth dying for. And that's certainly what he did. Number two is, I think we see the potential of the harvest. Says the harvest truly is plentiful. But then right after, we come up with a problem, don't we? It says, the harvest truly is plentiful, but the laborers are few. There's the problem. See, a lot of times we try to paint the picture another way, but you start thinking about that. What is the problem again? It says the laborers is the problem. The harvest isn't the problem. The laborers is the problem. Let me say that one more time. The problem is not the harvest. The problem is the laborers. There's too few. You know, you start thinking about the task of Christianity, it really is overwhelming, taking the gospel to the whole world. That is a big task. And you think about it, every person we come in contact with is a potential saint or a potential Christian. Which both those are one and the same, but just using different. But everyone has that potential. The problem is the labor, is not the harvest. A lot of times Christians will point out at the harvest. They'll never look at themselves. They'll never consider, what can I do to help this process? How can I plant to help the harvest? How can I water to help the harvest? How can I go out and I can collect the harvest? How can I help in this process? The problem is not the harvest. The problem is the laborers. Have we given up on the spiritual harvest? Have we given up on the spiritual harvest? Yeah, I did a lot of hay when I was younger. Unfortunately, I've kind of transitioned away from that. But my dad had a farm in Tyler County, and it was square bale. Square bale, square bale. And I tell you what, I'd look out into the field. There's a lot of bale. Laborers are few. AKA me and my brother. That was about it. You know, but you think about that. You know, there's a lot of things in that hay field, right? You know, you have this field over here that you haven't cut down yet. You got this field that's drying, and you got this field that's baled. I mean, there's a lot of different situations out there. But aren't there plenty of bales out there? Yeah, there's plenty of bales. There's people that are ready to become Christians. We've never asked the question. There's a lot of people ready for Bible study, but we haven't asked the question. There's a lot of people out there that are ready and receptive to the gospel. But we look out at the hay field that's all grown up, and you're like, well, it's not cut yet. Well, you're right. You're right. That isn't cut yet. And you're right. This field is drying. But over here, there are some bales that are ready to be collected. Are we looking out for those individuals that are coming ever so close to doing those things which they know they should do and becoming a Christian? The harvest is plentiful. There are plenty of opportunities out there. The question is, are there enough laborers? The devil is so good at his job, he gets us convinced that there's not a bale ready in the field. No, there's plenty of bales. You're just not looking. You're just not looking. There's plenty of bales out there. There's plenty of people that are ready. The process of time has happened. They've heard the Word of God, and they're getting closer, ever closer to becoming a Christian. You know that we've had individuals from conversations, we've had individuals that have just called the church asking to be baptized. You ever heard of a case like that? Individual said, hey, I'm studying my Bible. I see that I have to be baptized for the remission of sins. And I've researched, and the only group that I can find is the Church of Christ that was baptized for the remission of sins. The time has come. Those situations happen. I'm not saying they're common. But I'm saying we have to survey the field every once in a while. We have to go out to the world. We have to ask some questions to our grandkids, to our kids, to our friends, to our co-workers. Yes. And just try to find out where they're at. Are they in the process of they are just the hay field that's just grown up? Are they actually cut? There's a little preparation. They've got a little Bible knowledge. They're in the row. They've been raised. But they're not quite a bale yet. But then there's a bale. They need to be baptized. Of course, they have to come to these conclusions, but we have to be surveying the field. We have to be asking these questions. What's sad is I think sometimes we have this ripe produce in the field, but no Christian comes in contact with that individual, and you know what happens is the produce rots. Because the devil's not going to let ripe produce stand for too long, right? This person has studied their Bible. They've got close. They're about to become a Christian. And no one comes in contact with them. No one says anything to them. And you know what happens? Satan takes advantage and he destroys the crop. It was there. It was ripe for the picking. It was ready to be harvested. And we let the insect, we let Satan get to it. Instead of being there to plant, to water, to cultivate, to harvest that which was ready. The problem is not the harvest. God's Word is working on individuals at all times. But we have to be ready as well to be there throughout the process, to plant the seed, to do the watering, to make sure we're there when that crop is ripe to be harvested. I think many times people are looking for a no-action Christianity. Christianity that they can just come on Sunday, sit down, and then not take that Christianity into their lives. We've got to be careful. We've got to be careful not to fall in that trap. We are workers in the field of the Lord. And the church is always looking for workers. Because indeed, the harvest is plentiful and the workers are few. And you notice in this passage, it doesn't necessarily say preachers. It doesn't necessarily say elders. It says, hey, we're looking for some workers. We're looking for some laborers. And I think as an individual Christian, we fall into this category. We're working in the field of life. We're working in the harvest, and we as Christians have to be involved in that process. We have to watch when seeds are sown. We have to be there for the watering process, and we have to go back and revisit. And I think that's something that people don't have, that they make a mistake of, is they're not patient. Sometimes your job is just to plant the seed. Sometimes your job is to do the watering. Sometimes your job is to collect the crop. I don't know what your job is going to be tomorrow when you go into the workplace. Are you going to be planting some seeds? Are you going to be doing some watering? Let me give you some examples, because people feel like evangelism has to be a one-and-done thing. I'm going to go out, I'm going to talk to this person, they're going to become a Christian, and it's going to be over. It's going to take 15 minutes. That's not how gardening is. We plant the seed. We water, we wait, we cultivate, we watch over, we try to protect if we can, and we wait for that crop to come. Are we out in the field? Are we doing the work of the Lord? Well, how do you do this? I really think it's just small actions every day. I talked about that one training that I was at in the state. Probably you've had some situations like this. None of these stories are supposed to try to put me on a pedestal or anything like that. I'm just saying that you are going to have opportunities just like I did. I was in the middle of the state. I was at this hotel and they had the breakfast, so I went down. I tend to wake up pretty early. And I went down there and there was a lady there. She's reading her Bible. Well, question comes into my head, am I going to be a hypocrite today? that's the question that comes up. Am I going to be a hypocrite? Am I going to do what I'm trying to do? I'm trying to be a Christian and trying to do the best I can. Not that I'm perfect. Hands start to sweat. Heart starts to beat. Wait, you're a preacher. That would not happen. Oh, yeah, it happens today. Don't you worry. I walked up to that lady, and I started with kind of what we find in Acts chapter 8. You know, we have Philip and the Ethiopian eunuch. Well, Philip asked the question, hey, do you understand what you're reading? I didn't ask that. I just said, hey, what are you reading? He said, Isaiah. So I just went to the top. I said, oh, yeah, you know, Jesus and the sacrifice. And obviously, she was affiliated with a denomination. And we talked for a little while. And I said, well, have you ever heard of Christ Church? We talked about that. I don't know for sure. I'd say the conversation lasted 5 to 10 minutes. It didn't end with us yelling at each other. It didn't end with anything. And you say, well, was she going to become a Christian? Well, I don't know. I was just planting a seed that day. I was just planting a seed. That was all I was doing. I was doing some watering, okay? It's a long process. And to think that you are going to accomplish everything in a day is just putting yourself, you're setting yourself up to fail. I think that's the devil in your mind, actually. Hey, when you go and talk to this person about becoming a Christian, they're going to become a Christian just like that. No, it's a long process. But you know what? I like to think in my mind that she actually made some comments. She said, how this Christ Church came up? She asked me. She said, oh, you're a young man. You know, you go to church somewhere. I said, oh, yeah, the Church of Christ. And I did throw in some things about the Church of Christ. I said, you know, I try to follow the Bible. I the Church of the Bible. I think that's the church that Jesus died for. You know, I wasn't trying to be controversial or anything. I was trying to, you know, share the truth with her. And she said, well, you're a sweet young man, I think was the word. And I hope down the line she will remember that sweet young man, perhaps in a Bible study that she has down the road. I have no idea who else is going to come in contact with her. It's unfortunate that the laborers are few. I hope the next day she'd come in contact with another member of the church. I don't know if she will. The laborers are few. But you know what? If another laborer comes in contact with her, she might remember that young man that had that little conversation with her that morning, pretty early in that morning at that hotel that one day. It's a little thing. We think that we have to do all of this. One day you're going to be planting. Another day you're going to be trying to sow. You're going to be watering. You're going to be, and you know what? Eventually you're going to come across somebody in your life that's ready to become a Christian. And you'll be able to take them to the right place and do the things that you know are good and right. I do believe in the providence of God. And I don't think we can necessarily put our finger on it. Like I said, I'm not telling these stories. I'm just telling you that little things do make a difference in people's lives. One time I was preaching, it was at a congregation of seven. Yes, you heard me correct, seven. That was where I preached a lot before I came here. Actually, it's about the exact same size as this building. Seven people. And I was preaching on forgiveness that morning. And actually, I thought I did a horrible job personally. I mean, a lot of times you're hard on yourself. And this was one day I was certainly hard on myself. I just didn't feel like I was making points well and transitioning well. And I just, well, it was close to the end of the lesson. And a young lady got up out of the pew, and she literally walked out crying. I mean, just bawling. And I thought, oh, what did I say? You know, what did I do? You know, yeah, I was pretty young at this time, you know. And that doesn't happen every day. Someone just ran out crying, basically. I was only there the first and third Sunday. The next Sunday, she was baptized by the individual that was there. That day, I was just doing some watering. That's all I was doing. I can't take any credit. And that's what we see in 1 Corinthians chapter 3. It Paul says, you know, there's some planting that goes on. There's some watering that goes on. But God gives the increase. Really, without God, nobody could be saved. I was just doing a little watering that day. And honestly, I didn't think I was doing the best watering. But you know what? You know, those things work out. We have to think about these things. It's the small things. And I like to think that our ripple affects people down the line. Because you think about the size of the world, right? I'm just a small little pebble in the size of the world, and you imagine this pond, if you will, imagine that's the world, and I take my little pebble and I throw it in, what happens? We have those ripples. I'm going to try to make my ripples as big as I can, but the reality is, I'm not going to be able to reach the other side of the pond. I'm just going to be able to affect my ripple, you understand? And sometimes your ripple and my ripple are going to overlap in this life. And sometimes I'm going to say something to somebody, and you're going to say something to somebody, and us working together, laboring in the field, we're cultivating, we're watering, and we're trying to get these individuals to come to Christ. Your little ripple makes a difference. In fact, it's a big difference in the eyes of God. It's the little things of life that we have to be cognizant of and try to observe and try to think about, that we try to put things in perspective, is that the pond is so big, if I do not do my part, the world's in a hard place. Because you realize that your ripple, there's some places your ripple will touch that no one else's will touch. It's not hard to think about that and contemplate. Some of you travel for work. Some of you are in different places at different times. Some of you are in different counties than I'm in many times. Your ripple is different than my ripple, but your ripple certainly makes a difference. Your ripple will touch lives. Well, how will it touch lives? You have opportunities to teach people. And you don't have to necessarily teach them the whole Bible, but you could teach them a little bit here or there. I had an opportunity in college one time. It came out that I was a preacher in college, and that was a transition, because as soon as I was a preacher, I felt like my evangelism actually took a little bit of a hit, because then everybody just changed the way they acted around me. I thought I was way more effective when they didn't know that I was a preacher of any sort. But this one girl came to me, and she asked questions. She said, well, what about tongues? And we had a conversation. Was she converted, Kyle? No, not on that occasion. She was not converted. Not on that occasion. So we started having conversations. We started having Bible studies, and things build. It's the little things in our lives that we go out to the field and we try to be observant. And it's not only us teaching, you'll have opportunities to teach, but your example. Galatians chapter 2 and verse 20 says that we die and Christ is living in us. Everywhere I go, I don't really want to be known as a preacher. I want to be more known as a Christian. I wish people would just say, hey, look at Kyle Jackson, he's definitely a Christian. I'd rather them say that than me be a preacher really any day, because I feel like our world kind of puts that on a pedestal. I'd rather just be, you know, Kyle the Christian. But your example makes a difference. I remember in high school they had this thing called Meet You at the Pole, and it was actually started by a member of the church. It was they would meet at the flagpole and have a prayer before school started. It was like 7:55. And I thought it was a great thing. Like I said, it was started by a member of the church. By the time I got to high school, my opinion, it had been corrupted. A lot of things were going on, and I didn't think were good. I made the decision not to go. In the next 2 weeks, I received more questions than I received all through high school. Well, Kyle, why aren't you attending? It opened up so many discussions where a lot of teaching happened, a lot of seeds were planted, a lot of watering was done. Were they converted? We're working on it. We're working on it. A little seed, a little water, a little time, and things do happen. Care is so important in the fields of our Lord. If you just plant seed somewhere and you just kind of move on, sometimes that's the only opportunity you'll have. But if you plant a seed, if you can, try to go back and visit that seed. If you try to do some watering, try to go back and visit those places that you've watered. Try to go back and try to observe those things, because you never know when it's going to be ready for harvest. You know, I find this lesson to be so interesting because it starts out, the harvest is plentiful. And I agree. It is plentiful. I mean, it is plentiful. There are plenty of lost. There are plenty of people that have opportunities. You know, they need God, and certainly God has compassion on those individuals, and we should as well. And then he says, the problem's not really with the harvest, it's with the laborers. You have to be out there. You have to be checking the field. You have to make sure it doesn't rot. You have to make sure that these things don't come to take the seed. That when you do your watering, you got to watch, you know, there's all kinds of things that need to be done. And it seems like this would end with God saying, get out to the field. That's not what it says. Let's read what it says. It says, the harvest truly is plentiful, but the laborers are few. Therefore, pray the Lord of the harvest to send out laborers into his harvest. You know, I thought about this a long time. It almost seems, what's going on here? It seems like, hey, the harvest is plentiful. We don't have very many workers. Go be a worker. That's almost how I feel like it should end, but that's not how it ends. It says, therefore, pray to the Lord of the harvest that he may send out workers. You know, I've thought about this a long time. I'm not saying that I have the right answer to it. But you do think that prayer is a very powerful thing, and we have to acknowledge God's part in this process. In 1 Corinthians chapter 3, verses 6 and 7, it says, I planted, Apollos watered, but God gave the increase. So then neither he who plants is anything, nor he who waters, but God who gives the increase. I think when we're talking about this harvest, this spiritual harvest, we have to give God some credit. Some major credit. We have to think about Jesus has made the harvest possible. He has certainly came, he's died, he's been the sacrifice. Say, well, Kyle, that doesn't solve the worker problem. You're right, it doesn't. But we have to, I think, acknowledge that God is part of the process. There is a lot of work to be done. And we have to reflect on God's grace, mercy, forgiveness, his sacrifice to make this process possible. But I think part of the problem is when I first read this, is we do ignore the power of prayer. We understand that many things that God asks us to do have spiritual benefits, but they also have physical benefits. I want you to consider prayer for a moment. Certainly there are spiritual implications to prayer. God has power. He will intervene. James chapter 5 and verse 16, the fervent prayer of a righteous man avails much. But I think people forget about what you do when you in fact pray. I mean, I think there's spiritual benefits. I think God intervenes on our behalf. I believe in the power of prayer. But think about you actually physically saying a prayer. What happens? You're focusing on whatever you pray about. If you are praying for the harvest, if you are praying for workers of the harvest, and you pray that every night, you pray for the lost. You pray for the lost and dying world. You know what's going to happen? You're going to go through the same process Jesus did. You're going to be moved with compassion. And what does that move with compassion do? It prompts you to act. So when you start praying for the harvest, you start praying for the laborers, what starts to happen is I think you are going to be moved with compassion to act on the behalf of the dying and lost world. And I think it's a powerful thing. You think about that. If you prayed every night, He prayed every day for the lost and dying world. He prayed for the laborers. God, I know there's a shortage of laborers. I know there's a shortage of people coming in contact with people that need Bible study. There's a shortage of people coming into contact with, you know, we see why Bible questions, but there's not the right person there to give them the Bible answer. I pray that I have those opportunities. But not only do I pray that I have those opportunities, I pray that I will help to labor in the field of the Lord. Prayer helps us to focus. A lot of times we get focused on the wrong things, unfortunately. But when you look at Matthew chapter 9, Jesus observes the multitude, does he not? He observes the multitude. Can you observe the multitude? Can you observe the multitude? Can you see the sin? Can you see that they need help? And when you see that, when you look out and you see that, are you moved with compassion? Just like Jesus was. Are you moved with compassion? Are you moved with compassion to the point that you would pray for the harvest and the laborers? Not only that you would pray for the harvest and laborers, but then I think you really, because you go through this process, you see the problem, you reflect on the problem, you pray about the problem, you try to act and do what's right to solve the problem. You know, you think about the problems in your life, the problems that really consume your life. You probably all have those from time to time. Sometimes we make them bigger than they ought to be. But many of the problems in our life, what do? We start focusing on them. Then once we start focusing on them, what starts to come? Solutions. We start to see opportunities to solve that problem. You know, it seems strange that it ends with prayer, but I actually think it's one of the perfect things. Because what it does is if you do this correctly, it is going to prompt you to be exactly what God wants you to be. A laborer in his harvest. That's a question we all have to ask ourselves. We all have our ripple in this life. And certainly, our ripples are going to be limited. There's no doubt about that. But how big can your ripple be? Not only how big can your ripple be, but can you impact people that come into your ripple, that come into your space in the best way that you can? Sometimes it's going to be teaching them something. Sometimes it's going to be defending something. Sometimes it's going to be helping someone. Sometimes it's going to be giving something. Sometimes it's going to be teaching the truth. Sometimes it's just going to be a pat on the back. There's so many things that we can do to lead people to Christ. But we have to acknowledge that there's a harvest out there. What are you doing to help the harvest? What have you given to the harvest help? Perhaps today you need to be harvested. The time has passed. You have went through the time where you understand what the Bible teaches. You believe in the death, burial, and resurrection of Jesus Christ. And it's time for you to become a New Testament Christian. If you need to praise the church, you need to become a New Testament Christian. We ask you to please come as we stand and as we sing.